Welcome to Docs in a Pod, presented by WellMed. Over the next half hour, Docs in a Pod will educate you about the health and wellness of adults everywhere. Co-hosts Dr. Audrey Bauria and award-winning veteran broadcaster Ron Aaron will share information to improve your health and well-being. And now, here are Ron Aaron and Dr. Audrey Bauria.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Docs in a Pod. The award-winning program is available to you both over the air on the radio and via podcast. I'm Ron Aaron. Our co-host today is Dr. Audrey Bauria. Dr. Bauria is a medical director and has been part of the WellMed family for a number of years. She's currently a provider at the WellMed at 9th Avenue North Clinic in St. Petersburg, Florida. She began her interest in medicine at a very young age and went on to pursue a medical degree. Her degree is from Ross University School of Medicine in Portsmouth, Dominica, and she completed her residency in OBGYN fellowship at St. Mary's Hospital in Hoboken, New Jersey. Dr. Bauria is board certified in family medicine, which she loves. And on the side, when she's not doing medicine, she loves hanging with her family. She really loves traveling and has a bunch of dogs that get a lot of her attention as well. Hey, Audrey, it's great to have you on.
It's great to be back with you.
Talk to us a little bit, because we're going to take up the subject of colorectal cancer. And it turns out the population that you see, predominantly Medicare eligible, are at high risk.
Absolutely, Ron. That's one of the things that, for a preventive medicine standpoint, that's something we highly encourage our patients to make sure that they're getting either a colonoscopy or some sort of fecal blood sampling to check for blood in their stools.
And are patients compliant when you say, hey, you know what, you really need a colonoscopy?
Not everybody is. And that becomes a point of educating the patient as to why it's so important that they do so.
Well, let's bring on our special guest today, who is Dr. Kathleen Berger. She's at WellMed at St. Joseph in Houston. Kathleen earned her medical degree from the University of Guadalajara in Jalisco, Mexico, completed her surgery residency at Bronx Lebanon Hospital Center in Bronx, New York, and at Lincoln Hospital in Bronx as well, and later at Queens Hospital. She completed 4 years of general surgery before deciding to go into general practice and primarily now sees geriatric patients. Dr. Berger is board certified in wound medicine as well. When she's not at her clinic, she enjoys spending time with her family, and she is an avid movie watcher. Got to get you off that couch and exercise while you're watching those movies. Hey, Dr. Berger, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Ron. It's a pleasure. I'm excited.
Well, we were talking off the air about wound medicine, and we'll touch on that a little later. But first, let's focus on the whole question of identification, treatment, prevention of colorectal cancer. And give us the 411. What is colorectal cancer?
So colorectal cancer is a presence of cancer in the colon. We have our small intestine and our large intestine. The colon is the large intestine. And a presence of cancer in any part of the large intestine or rectum is considered colorectal cancer. It's the third most common cancer in our country. I think a little upwards of 52,000 cases a year. And now, you know, we're starting to see it in younger patients as young as 45 or younger. And this is, you know, in the average adult population. This is an absence of genetic syndromes that predispose us to an increased incidence of colorectal cancer. So I think it's 10.5% now of cases are seen in adults 45 and up. That's due to different factors, be it obviously our diet, level of exercise, the genes that we carry, our ethnicity, our race. All these things contribute to increase that risk. And, you know, we can touch on a list of those factors that can increase our risk of colorectal cancer in the average population. Again, in patients, persons that don't have a genetic syndrome that increases that risk.
Now, is there a genetic test that should be done regularly? If you go to the doc, your first visit, and they say, is there colorectal cancer in your family history? Boom, do you do a test for the gene?
It depends on how many. So not necessarily. It really would depend on how many family members, you know, are they first degree relatives? And you know, if there is a genetic syndrome in the family, like if there's a history of genetic syndrome already, such as Lynch syndrome or familial adenomatous polyposis, but no. So if you have a first degree relative, just one, for example, a brother, sister, father, mother, you wouldn't necessarily test for a genetic disease. Now, if you have multiple family members with different types of cancer or multiple first degree family members with colorectal cancer, then you, yes, then we would recommend genetic testing for one of the various different genetic syndromes that exist. There's the two that I mentioned, there's Peutz-Jeghers, there's multiple different genetic syndromes, but the most common that we don't really see frequently would be Lynch syndrome and familial adenomatous polyposis. Those are the two most common, and there are specific genes that we test for those.
Right,
we would send for testing.
We're going to come right back to you, but I want to let folks know who may have just joined us. You're listening to the award-winning Docs in a Pod. Our podcasts, by the way, are available wherever you get your podcast, and we're delighted to have you either by a podcast or on the radio. We're talking with Dr. Kathleen Berger. She's at WellMed at St. Joseph in Houston. I'm Ron Aaron, along with our co-host, Dr. Audrey Baria, and we're talking about colorectal cancer. And I want to come back to something that you were saying earlier, Dr. Berger, and that is the incidence of colorectal cancer is pretty high within our population. And as I understand it, there aren't a lot of early warning signs that say, hey, maybe I got a problem. And is that why we need to do screening tests?
Yes, that's a good point. And that's the benefit of screening in general for any cancer or any disease, is we want to detect it in the early stages. We want to detect it before it spread to the rest of the body or where it's so large it's causing symptoms. So yes, this is why the USPSTF, which is the entity that we use to in family medicine to screen patients for various different diseases, they recommend that for the general adult population, we start screening at age 45 for colorectal cancer. That's a grade B recommendation. But due to this increased incidence in younger patients, that is what we do. Prior, it was starting at age 50. But recently, in the last couple of years, they lowered they made the age younger, basically, to start screening. And so there's different ways we can screen. I don't know if you want me to go into that now.
Yeah, that would be interesting, because I have to tell you, I've got a very, very late good friend who died of colorectal cancer, and he just wouldn't go in to be screened. He ultimately had symptoms that were very painful for him. He finally went in, and it was too late by then. It had perforated his colon. And his body was riddled with cancer. Had he gone for a screening, just as a matter of course, he probably would have lived. So talk to us, what are the screening mechanisms, and are some better than others?
I'm sorry to hear about your friend, Ron. Yes, so the gold standard would be a colonoscopy. A colonoscopy is a procedure that is done by a gastroenterologist who you would schedule an appointment. He or she would get your history, then they'll schedule you for this test. For the test, you would need some light anesthesia, not full sedation, not general anesthesia. They sedate you so they are able to pass a camera through the rectum into the colon. I know it sounds a little scary, but you won't feel anything during the procedure because of the anesthesia. And the camera, this test is the gold standard because not only is it preventive, it's also treatment. It also gives the ability to treat at the same time. When we're looking, when the GI is looking, the gastroenterologist inside the colon, if he or she find a polyp, they can remove it in that moment. And the important thing about removing a polyp is polyps, there are different types of polyps, but some can turn into cancer. There's a direct correlation between polyps and cancer.
So growths like a stalactite hanging off a cave.
That's right. They're little stalactites and stalagmites inside the colon, so to speak, that they can remove. And if it is a depending on the type of polyp, is what the subsequent screening will be, so to speak. So if this is a cancerous or has a high grade of dysplasia, which means there's mutation inside that polyp that is going to very likely turn into a cancer, then oftentimes they'll refer, you know, we'll refer the patient to a surgeon, go ahead and remove that part of the colon if it is a very high risk polyp. If it is a medium risk, like a tubular adenoma, those will require more frequent screening intervals. You'll need a colonoscopy done more frequently, depending on how many polyps you had, the size of the polyp. If it is a tubular adenoma, so you may need to repeat it in a year. If you had a certain number of polyps, more than one to, I forget the exact number. The larger the number, the more recent you will need to repeat that's colonoscopy.
So together, some are faster growing than others.
Correct. Yes. So you'll either need to repeat your colonoscopy in a year, 3 years, or 5 years, depending on the pathology of the polyp. If they're hyperplastic polyps, those don't have cancer potential, and those usually we repeat in 5 to 10 years, the colonoscopy. And if you don't have any polyps or any concerning lesions on your colonoscopy, then you repeat it in 10 years. So you only have to go through that process every 10 years if it is negative.
Now, I want you to talk to me in just a minute about the prep for the colonoscopy, because some folks are very intimidated by preparing the day before in order to clean out the colon. We'll talk about that in just a moment. And we're going to bring Dr. Barya into this as well. I'm Ron Aaron. You're listening to Docs in a Pod. We come to you every week with a discussion of a variety of medical and health issues affecting not only seniors, but others. And our special guest today is Dr. Kathleen Berger, and our co-host is Dr. Audrey Barya. You're on Docs in a Pod.
Turning 65, it's time for an important choice, deciding what Medicare coverage is best for you. WellMed can help. When you become a WellMed patient, you can connect our primary care with a Medicare Advantage plan. WellMed doctors and care teams spend quality time with you, listening and learning about your health. WellMed and a Medicare Advantage plan could be right for you. Choose WellMed. Learn more at 866-433-5048. That's 866-433-5048.
We are so pleased you're sticking with us right here on the award-winning Docs in a Pod. I'm Ron Aaron, along with our co-host, Dr. Audrey Barya. And we're talking with Dr. Kathleen Berger, who is with WellMed at St. Joseph in Houston. We're talking about colorectal cancer. We're talking about diagnosis, treatment, prevention, and the whole ball of wax. And Dr. Barya, you had a pretty good question, because I asked you early on whether your patients were compliant when you recommended a screening test, and you said, you know, some were and some weren't. So, Dr. Berger, the opportunity is for Dr. Barya now to ask you a question. Audrey?
So, Dr. Berger, what are some techniques that you've used with patients that are on the fence about wanting to get a colonoscopy, and they're just not convinced that it's the right thing for them to do?
Yes. The good news is, what the techniques that I use is I tell them that there are other options to screen for colon cancer. We talked about the gold standard or the best test for screening, but there are also stool-based tests. I think that you mentioned at the beginning of the show that are also approved methods of testing. One, the next best one after the colonoscopy, it's a DNA testing method in the stool. One of the common names that we use is Cologuard. That's the company that normally we order that test to be done through. And it checks for DNA biomarkers in the stool. And these are biomarkers that are actually shed from cancer cells in the colon. It can have false positives, is the only one of the few drawbacks if we have a history, you know, the patient has a history of colon polyps and the polyp is bleeding, it can test positively falsely, but it is still the next best test. If it's negative, of course, you know, that's, if it's positive though, however, we don't, it doesn't necessarily mean you have a cancer. But so I tell patients, basically, if you don't want to go through the colonoscopy, this is the next best test, but you do have to mail in the sample. You know, you need to follow the instructions to a T that come in the kit. If the patient doesn't seem like that's going to be something they can do or want to do, just due to possibly the difficulty of obtaining the specimen and mailing it in, and most of the patients that I'm seeing are older. So oftentimes the easiest and the easiest, most practical test is the ColoFIT or the FIT test, which checks for antibodies in the stool to the hemoglobin molecule. It's also an approved test, and we're basically testing for those antibodies in the stool. It's very sensitive, and that, you know, they can, much simpler to obtain at home. And I tell them to bring in that. I say, just drop it off here. Then, you know, try to obtain the test within 2 days of doing the test. Please bring it in. Past 2 days, you know, it can lose its viability, the specimen, because it's supposed to be mailed into the lab.
Now, those of us who have pets end up bringing a stool sample to the veterinarian's office. So you got to grab a chunk of poop to bring to your office.
That's right. In a card. We process it here. And when, you know, I make it sound like it's very easy to do and it could potentially save their life, they're more, I see a lot more compliance with the patients. You know, when they don't really want to go through a colonoscopy, or, you know, when they say, I'm too old for this, or why am I doing this at age 65? And I tell them, well, really, we really only have to do it for research purposes till age 75. If there's no personal or family history of colon cancer. I tell patients, if you're 75, but functionally you're a 60-year-old or 50-year-old, you know, if your life expectancy is 20 plus more years, I'm going to keep offering you screening, and the guidelines allow us to keep screening till age 86, the USPSTF guidelines. So, you know, I let the, you know, if I think the patient is functional for their age, in other words, I go based on their functional age, not their chronological age. I keep offering them the screening until they either don't want to do it or until the guidelines no longer recommend it.
So pardon me for interrupting, but I want to come back to something you said and Dr. Barya is looking for help on. If you get them to agree to try the ColoGuard, for example, looking for the DNA link, if it comes back positive, don't they then need a colonoscopy? So if you do the colonoscopy to begin with, you solve the problem.
That's right.
That's one of the things that I tell the patients, that listen, the ColoGuard test is good for 3 years unless they become symptomatic within those 3 years. And when I say symptomatic, I mean if they see any rectal bleeding or anything, you know, any change in bowel habits from their normal is something that they would have to let me know about. But that test is only good for 3 years. So 3 years, let's say you did it in 2022, 2025. You're going to need to either repeat that or do a colonoscopy, or as Dr. Berger was saying, the FIT test. But the FIT test is a yearly test that would have to get done. So if they would just go for the colonoscopy, that gets them 10 years where they don't have to worry about it unless they become symptomatic.
Which then brings us, Dr. Berger, to the prep issue, because I'm old enough. I'm 81. I'll be 82 in May, and I can give you the birth date and you can get a present to me. But
you don't look 82. You don't look 82. Well, 81 or 82.
When I first had a colonoscopy, that would be a lot of years ago, the prep was awful. Drinking what seemed like gallons of stuff and hour after hour after hour on the toilet. And then my last colonoscopy, 4 years ago maybe, it seems like the prep has gotten so much easier.
I'll be honest with you. I've not had a colonoscopy myself, so I don't know what the experience is like, but I've of course heard many not pleasant stories of the prep process. The flavor is sometimes not very appealing. Most patients today are able to tolerate it well. The flavor, I don't know if it's improved, but I haven't heard as much complaints about it of late. I just prepare them and tell them you're going to be going to the restroom because that's the whole point of the prep. So to be prepared with the family, with your plans, make yourself of the mindset that this is for a good cause. And it's not something you're going to have to be doing most likely very frequently. And as Dr. Barrios said, if it's negative, you won't have to even worry about it until 10 years from now. And by then, we may have new technology that requires a different type of prepping where it's not as unfavorable. You know, try to keep it positive. But as you stated, the prep's improved already. I try to keep it positive and try to encourage them that this may add years to their life and good quality years to their life. And they seem to respond to that well.
Understanding why the prep is important is helpful. Why do you have to clean the colon out? So the camera can see stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
So let's talk now about if, God forbid, you have colon cancer. How far along are we in successfully treating it, Dr. Berger?
Very successful if it's caught in early stages. I don't have the percentages of survival, in oncology, 5-year survival, 10-year survival, those are the stats they use. But if caught early, the prognosis is very good at five years for colorectal cancer. It's very high. I forget the percentage. So usually surgery is involved if it's a localized tumor. And then depending on if there are any lymph nodes that are positive, then possibly chemo or other immunotherapies would be given because they test now for specific types of tumor cells, and there are targeted treatments now to each specific type of cancer. So there's not just one type of colon cancer. There's specific biomarkers for each type of cancer. So, but for the most part, if it is a localized cancer, a localized tumor inside the colon, you resect that part of the colon, and the patient generally does well. The patient generally does well and has a good life expectancy.
When you say resect the colon, you chop that little piece out.
Yes, we would refer the patient to a colorectal surgeon, who would check imaging to make sure it hasn't spread. Assuming that's the case, they'll schedule the patient for surgery, remove that portion where the cancer is, reattach the bowel in most cases, so patients don't usually need quote unquote a bag after that type of surgery, which is also very good news. And they do very well. We screen them. We keep screening them. We send them to GI to help us with that. And their life expectancy is good if it's caught early.
And if it's not caught early, it's not good.
Unfortunately, no. If it's caught in later stages, like most cancers, you can slow down the progression of the spread of the cancer, the metastasis with chemo and that, there are treatment options, but the 5-year survival goes down the further it spreads. If there's lymph nodes in the abdomen and the lung, liver, wherever it's spread to, the more the spread, the lower the long-term survival. So this is the importance of getting it detected early, like with any other cancer.
Right. Let me ask you one last question because we're about out of time. Are there ways we can prevent it? I'm a big believer in eating a ton of broccoli every day. So if I eat a lot of broccoli, will I prevent colon cancer?
So it helps lower your risk. Yes, that's a good point. High fiber diet has been linked to lowering risk of colon cancer. That's whole grains. Yes, your green veggies, fruits, vegetables. Getting regular exercise. When we exercise, we increase our antioxidants, which are anti-inflammatory. That helps protect us against formation of cancer that's been shown in multiple studies. When we exercise, our bowel is moving more quickly. It helps our bowel move more quickly, which will put our bowel in less contact with potential carcinogens, which we would get from food or the environment. Otherwise, good weight control. Oh, go ahead.
Got to stop you right there. Unfortunately, sure. Diet, exercise, weight control. We got to get
smoking, smoking and alcohol, avoiding smoking and alcohol.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Dr. Kathleen Berger. We really, really appreciate you coming on. WellMed at St. Joseph in Houston. For Dr. Audrey Barry, I'm Ron Aaron. Thanks for joining us on the award-winning DocCinipod.
Executive producers for DocCinipod are Dan Calderon and Leah Madrano. Our producer is Natalie Ibarra. Associate producer is Charisse Pendleton. Thank you for listening to DocCinipod, presented by WellMed. We welcome your emails with suggestions and comments on this program at radio@wellmed.net. And be sure and listen next week to DocCinipod, presented by WellMed.